Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Well, ballots are still being counted in this very tight race. Joe Biden has broken the record for the most votes ever received by a presidential candidate. The latest, I'm looking at the AP, 69.7 million. But Donald Trump has 66.7 million votes. Biden is definitely ahead of Biden. Biden is ahead of Trump in the popular vote, and right now the Electoral College. It's Biden 227 to Trump 213. But the fact of the matter is, Donald Trump is doing much better than a lot of people expected with those 66.7 million votes. We are going to keep track in real time because things are changing pretty quickly. The Trump campaign just said it is going to request a recount in Wisconsin. The AP has not yet called Wisconsin, but Biden remains ahead of Trump by about 20,000 votes. It could be called this hour, and we will keep an eye on that to bring you the latest. Joining us to talk about all of this is Ellie Mistal, justice correspondent for The Nation, covering the courts, the criminal justice system, and politics. And Ellie writes The Nation's monthly column, Objection. Hi, Ellie. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me. Sorry, I haven't had a lot of sleep, so if I'm low energy, I apologize.
I was going to just say the same thing. I was up really late. My brother actually sent me a text at 4 a.m. to give me an update, which was kind of unsettling, but that's where we are right now. So Ellie, I want to ask you first. I mean, obviously we don't know what's going to happen until these votes come in, but the fact of the matter is a lot of people did not expect it would be so close.
Yeah, because polling is wrong. Right. At some point, we should have learned this lesson after 2016. Hopefully we'll learn this lesson now. The polling is wrong. I don't know what the pollsters are doing wrong. They're getting data. I believe in science. I understand how data works, but clearly how they're interpreting and weighting the data is wrong. And it's consistently wrong. And that's why we have these, I'm feeling better today than I was when I went to sleep today. Because Democrats are walking around today like we took an L because of some poll that they saw on 538 or on the New York Times. When in reality, as you just explained, Biden won the popular vote. He's winning the Electoral College. He's winning in key states enough to continue holding that victory in the Electoral College. What's the narrative that he underperformed only works is if you believed the polls. If you understand that the polls were just wrong, this looks like an election in a closely divided country.
Well, there's a couple different ways to look at it, because historically speaking, it is very hard to beat an incumbent. That is a fact. Yet, given what we've seen from Trump over the past 4 years, with the relentless lying, the racism, family separation, COVID, it just goes on and on. That is why so many people are shocked that Trump still managed to get even more votes than he got in 2016.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that goes to show that we tend to think that we are a better country than we are. We think we are better people than we are. Trump exists because he appeals to the lowest common denominator. He appeals to the least within ourselves. And that appeal works for a whole lot of people. There are a whole lot of people in this country who are just straight trifling, right? There are a whole lot of people in this country who believe, who are low information people, don't have all the facts, believe the worst when they do have some of the facts, conspiracy theorists, misogynist people, racist people. Like, there are a whole lot of people for whom the Trump effect works. And, you know, in polite society, in educated society, we tell ourselves, oh, that's a minority. We tell ourselves, oh, that's just a small, you know, niche of a niche of a niche, right? In fact, it's been proven again this election cycle, that's about half the country. About half the country believes these, I believe Hillary Clinton called them, deplorable things. And the quicker, you know, you'd hope that that happened after 2016, the quicker the rest of the country kind of processes that and understands that and comes up with a strategy to defeat that, the better we'll be. You know, to me, one of Biden's, you know, one of the lies that this election has put pain to is Biden's thought that somehow he was going to recapture and reappeal to the rural, white, working class voter who's been left out of the cold by the Trump regime. Obviously, that ain't work. And so, you know, maybe next time the Democrats run a national election, maybe next time the Democrats run a Senate election in some of these predominantly white states, they'll have a different message, right? They'll have a message that maybe doesn't over rely on rural white working class voters, because it seems pretty clear that they ain't never coming back.
Well, and it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, what the exit polls say, the analysis pieces that will be written in the weeks to come. There are many layers to this, just like there were in 2016, because you have, you know, your people who just want their tax cuts and they'll vote Republican no matter what. You've got your people who are anti-choice and they will vote Republican no matter what. But we really need to have an honest conversation about people who are just spewing nonsense. I mean, I heard someone on NPR this morning say, you know, my family came to this country to be free. We left a socialist country. We don't want to live in one. I mean, that's nonsense. And then people say, vote for Biden and your freedoms will be taken away. I mean, a lot of people are saying these things, and we really need to have a conversation about how we got to this place and the echo chamber of Fox and the right-wing media sphere.
Sure. But I also feel like you know, if there were misses, if there were disappointments, a lot of that goes from not pushing back against those narratives, right? So let's take Florida, which, you know, made me sad, made a lot of lefty people sad when that wasn't called early, and then when eventually it was called for Trump. That made a lot of people sad because it looked like Biden really nearly lost Latino voters, throwing them all into the same pot. In Florida, and specifically did lose Cuban voters in Florida, in Miami, and non-Puerto Rican Hispanics in Miami. Why did that happen? Well, Trump was, you know, directly targeting ads, Spanish language ads, doing the same kind of misinformation routine that he does, you know, for the rest of us at his super spreader rallies, on Spanish-speaking radio. He was specifically going after Cubans and Venezuelans, and specifically misrepresenting Biden's positions and to that community. And there was no pushback from the Democrats in those channels, right? There was a bunch of, come on, man, that's not what we're about, which didn't work, right? Dumb argument. I feel like, you know, if there's one thing I would like people to learn from this election, come on, man, is not an effective comeback when Trump starts lying and pushing disinformation. When you say that we need to have a conversation about, you know, why people believe these lies, we also need to have a fight back for when these lies are being surfaced, right? We need a lot more strength and a lot more real-time fact-checking. Obviously, it's not going to come from the media. Obviously, it's not going to come from the national media. Obviously, it's not going to come through most newspapers. We need a lot more direct, moneyed, paid-for pushback when Trump and the Republicans start doing their thing.
Well, if you'd like to join us, what are your thoughts about what is happening right now? When you look at the vote tallies, how do you make sense of the fact that Trump is actually getting more votes than he got in 2016. As Ellie said, you know, in many cases, the Democrats take a very centrist line on a lot of issues. I mean, how many times did Biden say he was against the Green New Deal and was not going to ban fracking, you know, rather than talking about what he wanted to do on climate change? I mean, there's just so many layers to this. But then you have people voting for Trump who spew things that are just not true. So how are you looking at all of this? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be refreshing our pages just to see if anything comes down from Wisconsin, because election officials there just said only 300 more votes to count. So hopefully we'll get some news from Wisconsin. We've got a couple of comments. KO writes, in my opinion, the racists are the majority in this country. They were reacting to Kamala Harris's potential to be the next president, pure and simple. Aaron writes, I think the weirdest part is realizing that almost half of the voters do not have a problem with Trump, and that we spent 4 years complaining about, moaning about, and every intelligent Republican jumps his sinking ship. And yet that didn't work. Millions and millions of people still voted for him. I feel stupid, like I missed something. Ellie, what are your thoughts?
I mean, the most disappointing thing for me in these results so far is the United States Senate. And it's not just because even if Biden is able to pull out an electoral college victory, a Biden presidency with a Mitch McConnell Senate majority leadership is dead on arrival. It's a lame duck presidency on day one. Even beyond the kind of policy issue there, the disappointing thing for me about the Senate was that essentially Republican senators were rewarded for enabling Trump, for going along with Trumpism. The more tightly you clung to Trump, the better you did. That was true in 2018 as well. People forget this. We also lost, Democrats also lost a lot of Senate races in 2018, where Republican senators who were most out forward favor in front of Trump for Trump were able to hang on to their seats in 2018 as well. The voters are not punishing Republican senators in red to purple states for sticking closely with Trump. They are rewarding them for sticking closely with Trump. And that is that's very disappointing to me. I think that the lesson that Republican senators will take from this, and they won't be wrong, is that by being as abrasive and norm-breaking and rule-breaking as Trump, that's what their voters want to see. And so that's a problem. That is a real sadness from this election. And so to your commenter, when she's saying, you know, I feel like I missed something, I don't think she missed anything. I think we just didn't want to believe that this country was, again, I'll use Hillary Clinton's words, was as deplorable as it is. I mean, I think people, just to slightly tangentially, people kind of owe Hillary Clinton an apology, right? Because the narrative for the past, you know, 6-8 weeks has been like, oh, Hillary Clinton was a terrible candidate. Obviously, now that we have a reasonable candidate, things are going to get a lot better. They didn't. They didn't get a lot better. It wasn't a lot easier. Biden went to Wisconsin. Barely eke that out, right? Maybe has barely eked that out, right? So maybe it's less about like Hillary Clinton was a bad candidate. Maybe it's less about, oh, people were reacting to Kamala Harris. Maybe we are just a deeply divided, deeply partisan country where one party has completely adopted white supremacist, bigoted, sexist philosophies. And the other side hasn't. Like, maybe that's actually all it is. And what we do with that information, you know, that's probably above my pay grade. that is above me, perhaps. But that does appear to be our reality.
Well, and to your point about the Senate, so in Colorado, John Hickenlooper, the former Democratic governor, defeated Senator Cory Gardner. Mark Kelly beat Senator Martha McSally. But you had Joni Ernst winning over Teresa Greenfield in Iowa. In Montana, Steve Daines beat back a challenge from Steve Bullock. A lot of people, that was pretty close, and it happened right before we went to bed last night on the West Coast. And then look at Lindsey Graham and Jamie Harrison. I mean, Jamie Harrison raised $57 million, the highest quarterly fundraising total for any Senate candidate in U.S. history.
He raised $100 million. They put $100 million into that race overall.
Oh, it was 100.
And Lindsey Graham, yeah, wow. They put $100 million into that race overall, and Lindsey Graham won by double digits going away. Mm. Going away.
So they put $100 million in South Carolina and $100 million in Kentucky, where McConnell, he was called early in the night.
Yep. So what does that say? What is, and again, McConnell and Graham, two of this, you know, McConnell is an evil unto himself. Graham, one of the person who has gotten as close to Donald Trump's boot as you can. And he won going away. What does that say about not just the, you know, certainly the people of Kentucky and South Carolina, but also the people of our country? It says that we are a majority deplorable nation, or at least a bare minority deplorable nation. That's what it says. And you know what? And again, what we do with that information is unclear. But we at least have to start acknowledging that information. It's like, you know, people always say, Biden always says, there are a lot of people who say, oh, I mean, America, we're better than this. No, we are not. We are not better than this. We are exactly this. And we can't overcome being this until we look ourselves in the mirror and acknowledge what we are.
Yeah, and in Iowa, $47 million. I mean, this is just so much money. Daily Beast headline, Dems burned hundreds of millions on failed Senate campaigns.
Joni Ernst didn't know her own state, and she still won. Right? Joni Ernst embarrassed herself in front of her own voters in those debates, and she still won. David Perdue in Georgia. We still don't know Georgia exactly because Atlanta, we're still trying to count votes from Atlanta. But there's a great chance that David Perdue in Georgia won after being embarrassed by the Democrat in the debate. Mm-hmm. Maybe debates don't matter. Have we thought of that recently? It's just, you know, people are surprised, but fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. This is exactly like 2016 in so many ways. Hmm. And when you're surprised in 2016 and you're surprised in 2020, you have to start asking which part of my underlying assumption is off. And I think that for Americans, for lefty Americans, for college educated Americans, the assumption that most of the country is decent is the underlying assumption that is wrong.
Today we're joined by Ellie Mistal, justice correspondent for The Nation. We're talking about the election results, what they mean, what they say about this country. And we've got full lines and a lot of emails, so let's go through as many as we can for the rest of the hour. Let's hear from Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show. Do we have Lisa?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I wanted to mention something that doesn't seem to get much airway, except, of course, you have covered this before. Greg Palast is an investigative reporter that has been investigating the voter purges, the gerrymandering, the incredible levels of conflict of interest that has been going on with the whole electoral process for the past 20 years. And the Democrats have not even made a dent into that or even exposed all that to any significant degree. That's because in some part they've also participated in similar levels of gerrymandering and voter disenfranchisement as well in certain areas. Of course, not to the extent of the Koch-funded systems that have been set up by the Republican Party in major states. But also I want to mention that, I mean, seriously, Biden basically ran on that nothing will change. And younger voters who are also are not dependent on the Fox News or not dependent on the on the major media. They're dependent on social media that in many instances has a lot more information. They're not. Why would they feel inclined to vote for somebody who is basically not going to be making any important changes?
Lisa, you bring up some interesting points. And Ellie, I mean, again, this was a low information race. I mean, especially if you watch the cable shows, they never talk about issues. And yesterday I was watching this video from Now This about all of the bills that House Democrats have passed that probably would have gotten passed if the Dems won the Senate. Things that never get attention, like a pathway to citizenship for farm workers. I mean, protections for workers, more money for frontline essential workers, money for childcare. I mean, programs that we desperately need, and yet a lot of this hardly got any attention.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, look, I agree. I'm an issues person. And so I agree that you know, the media doesn't give enough play to issue. But when you actually, this is what I'm talking about questioning our underlying assumptions, right? Maybe people don't care about issues. Maybe the reason why media doesn't report a lot of issues is because when they report issues, it doesn't get a lot of ratings. But when they report the latest crazy thing that Trump does, it does get a lot of ratings. And maybe that's less of a media problem and more of an America problem about what we choose to click on, right? Because the bottom line is, as much as I do not think that there was a lot of issue focus in the media, nor was there a lot of positive issue focus from the Biden campaign, Trump ran on a completely issue-free platform for the second time in the row and got more votes. There was no signature issue for the Trump campaign. There was no consistent message from the Trump campaign. If we were to talk about issues with the Trump campaign, surely we would talk about the massive economic downturn we've suffered under because of a complete, utter mismanagement of a global pandemic that has cost the lives of 230,000 Americans. And yet that issue turned out to not be important to somewhere north of 65 million people in this country. Again, I brought up the Senate race in Iowa because that was an extremely issue-focused Senate race where the Republican was ignorant of many of the issues. I brought up the Senate race in Georgia because that was an issue-focused Senate race where the Republican was ignorant of many of the issues. And yet those Republicans likely won. Maybe our underlying assumption as elite, educated, high information people, maybe our underlying assumption that the rest of this country gives a hoot about issues is one of those assumptions that needs to be challenged. Because now, it looks like we live in a world where people just want to vote for their celebrity.
Well, Florida did vote for a $15 minimum wage. South Dakota, Arizona, and New Jersey voted to legalize marijuana. Colorado voted for 12 weeks of paid family and medical leave. Colorado voted against an anti-choice piece of legislation. So, I mean, and we're still waiting for other progressive ballot measures to find out how they did in other states.
So here's a great question, right? So I think so glad you brought that up, right? So when you looked at the actual propositions in a lot of states, the liberal side, the progressive proposition, either won or did quite well, overperformed the Democratic Senate candidate in a lot of these places, right? Overperformed Democratic House candidates in a lot of these places. The issues overperformed the Democrats. Why? Is it because the Democrats didn't talk enough about the issues? Or is it because we are a partisan cauldron where when it comes to voting for candidates, issues don't matter to people, at least half the people? So how can you live in a world? How can you hold in your head, if you're a Florida voter, how can you hold in your head, I'm going to vote for $15 minimum wage and I'm going to vote for Donald Trump? Like, how does that exist in the same person? And if we understand that it does exist, are we really going to say it's because Biden didn't talk about something enough? Or are we just going to have to kind of admit that people? that the reasons why they're voting for Trump are different, are compartmentalized and carterized off from the rest of their brain. One way of explaining the past, you know, four presidential elections is that the bigger celebrity overperformed. Trump overperformed twice. Obama overperformed twice. We like to think that Obama won because he was a decent human being with really good ideas who had empathy. Maybe Obama won his two elections handily because Obama is one of the biggest stars in the pyramid, right? Because Obama's a cool dude. Maybe that's all it was. George W. Bush won because people wanted to have a beer with him. He was a mediocrity who could barely put two sentences together, and he won two elections, one winning the popular vote, the last Republican to do so in 2004 when he beat John Kerry, because people thought they could have a beer with him. I mean, maybe we just have to start acknowledging how dumb this country is before we can have a chance to really address it. Because continuing to tell ourselves that we're better than what we are just doesn't seem to be working.
Well, here's another upset for Democrats. Susan Collins just announced her Democratic challenger, Sarah Gideon, has conceded the race. So Susan Collins in Maine just declared victory. Well, Ellie, thank you for joining us. We will have you on again to continue analyzing the results as they come in. Ellie Mistal is a justice correspondent for The Nation. Thanks so much for joining us, Ellie.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will take your calls and your emails about these races. They're coming in as we are refreshing our pages. So it looks like for sure the Democrats are not going to take back the Senate. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now I would like to welcome Helene Olin to the show. Helene is an opinion writer with The Washington Post. Hi, Helene. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. Good morning.
Well, good morning. We just announced that Susan Collins has won her reelection bid in Maine. It looks like there's no way the Democrats are going to take back the Senate now.
Well, I mean, they could still potentially, potentially. It looks like both races in Georgia are likely headed to January runoffs. Okay. So it's possible you might make it to a 50-50 split. But this is still, there's no really great way to spin this. I mean, Biden looks like he is going to win. So I should backtrack a little bit, right? It looks like Biden will probably squeak out a victory here. That's much, much tighter than anyone expected. But hey, victory is victory, as we know, since we currently have a president who lost the popular vote, right? So, that is definitively a good thing. But the Senate is a tremendous, tremendous loss. And all I keep thinking this morning, I think a couple of things, is first, Joe Biden saying, that Republicans would have an epiphany when Trump is gone and work with him. We're all going to get to find out the hard way whether he's right or not. I hope he's right. My suspicion is he is not right, because Mitch McConnell, when challenged about stimulus spending by Amy McGrath, who he soundly and roundly defeated, by the way, all but literally laughed at her. It's not all but laughed at her. If you watch the debate clip, laughed at her about it. I mean, just started laughing at her. So it seems sort of unlikely that the Republicans are going to be moved to compromise with Joe Biden, especially with him coming in with such a narrow victory. So it's going to be a tough, few months. And by the way, that's all assuming Donald Trump, leaves on his own. Which I think he will. I think he will be out. I don't think if he files court challenges, I don't think he will win, but that's me. I'm an optimist that way. But there's no question we're in for some rather difficult times.
And Helene,
I should say just real quickly, better than what we've got now, because, hey, at least Trump will be out of the White House.
Well, to that point, we have a ton of emails and calls, which we'll get to in a minute. But what's your read on this? I mean, a lot of people are shocked that Trump is doing so well with 66.7 million votes so far.
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. And it's all kind of like everybody a little incoherent. But I think COVID didn't play out the way a lot of people thought. I think weirdly, if he loses, it's, and he will, it's still because of COVID, but not the way people think. I think it's going to be in part because he acted like he didn't care. Whether people support shutdowns or not seems to be an open question. I say this standing in Harley Ruta's district in Orange County right now, where what looked like a sure victory might not be now. That's Huntington Beach, the center of the anti-masking efforts down here. Gil Cisneros is also in trouble. So I think there are, I think that's one thing we really need to talk about, right? That the economy is a huge issue for voters, and huge numbers of people were still saying they felt Trump was doing a better job. And when you look at it and you say, wait a second, how can you think Trump's doing a better job, right? Unemployment's, you know, we hit, you know, all but depression levels at one point this year. You know, huge numbers of people are still under enormous, enormous financial strain. You know, the unemployment systems didn't work very well. And now, of course, there's been no stimulus for months. So the payments are beyond inadequate. How could anybody think this is a good economy? And the answer I'm beginning to suspect is that they don't blame him for it. And that's something Democrats are going to have to reckon with, because, you know, they have so embraced this idea of shutting things down and, you know, flooding the you know, compensating with a stimulus when Biden is in the White House and when Democrats control the Senate. Again, Democrats are not going to control the Senate. So what are you going to do? Most likely. So what are you going to do now? And I think that's a big thing to reckon with. I think a second thing to reckon with, and I think you could really see this in California and how the propositions have done here, is that people are progressive when they don't think, you know, it's going to cost them anything. And when they think it's going to cost them something, they get their backs up real fast. And I think that's more of an issue than people want to admit. You know, and I'm thinking Prop 22, which as far as I can tell, basically went down not simply because of the immense amount of spending by the tech companies on it, but also because people seem to be fairly convinced they were going to have to spend a few extra dollars on an Uber fare or Uber Eats drop-off, and thank you very much, they weren't very interested in that. And I think that's an issue that needs to be really reckoned with. And, right. You know, this is, as you know, what I write about a lot. You know, I sort of write, when I'm not writing about politics, about the integration of money in our lives and how we think of it. And I think that's something we're really going to have to wrestle with. I think the third is, you know, what kind of support do we have, you know, for racial justice in this world? And again, I think there's a lot of support, but I don't know people support it at the point where, you know, they're going to change affirmative action policies over it. Again, we can see that in California, right?
Right.
And I think, right, and I think these are things we really need to reckon with. Mm-hmm. And I say all this, by the way, knowing that the Republicans wouldn't reckon with any of this. And they would immediately declare a sweeping victory because, of course, their guy is in the White House. And so that's something else we might want to reckon with, too. How do you proceed under such, you know, conditions, right? How do you proceed when you have a party, one party, not the Democratic Party, that doesn't feel they're part of a governing, you know, coalition in the way the Democrats feel they are part of, you know, not a governing coalition, that's not the right word, part of, you know, a constitutional republic where we, you know, have power and we share power and we are going to work with each other. You have one party that doesn't. And how do you reckon with that?
Right. Well, today we are talking about the results, and we're joined today by Helene Olin, who is an opinions writer with The Washington Post. We have a number of phone calls and emails, so let's go through as many as we can. And let's go next to Nico in California. Hi, Nico. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I wanted to ask, do you think the closeness of this election is a result of a lack of civic education in this country?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think it's a lack of civic education. I mean, because I've got kids, and as far as I can tell, they've actually gotten a pretty good civic education. But I think what it is that people don't think about it. We have this sort of idea, and I've really sort of investigated this through the rubric of financial literacy, where, you know, we'll go to school, we'll teach people, you know, X, Y, and Z, and they'll remember it for the rest of their lives. That's actually not true. You know, we tend to forget almost everything we learned unless we practice it regularly. And I think that's where the problem creeps in. It's not part of our daily lives in any meaningful way. And that's not because we don't, like, you know, have flags waving all around us or anything like that. It's because we're a country where, on one hand, we talk, you know, about the greater good and patriotism, but on the other hand, we live in a turbo-capitalist society where everything, you know, there's no real secure safety net, and everything sort of devolves onto the individual. So in turn, the individual acts like they are responsible, which they are, actually. And I think that's a huge issue. And I would say the other part of it is that we don't have a lot of group organizations left the way we used to. You know, it was much easier to corral people on the left when you had, you know, major union presence. Well, outside of government, union representation is well under 10% now. Most people do not belong to a union. If they don't go to church, where are you exactly finding them? And that's another big issue. The Republicans, you know, have somewhat less of an issue with that. So I would say those are two huge parts that really need to be reckoned with.
And to add to that, we have a tweet from a listener who says, lack of investment in education results in poor media literacy, which is paired with billionaire-funded disinformation, brainwashing, and incestuous media ecosystems. Helene, we were also just talking about, you know, some of the comments we've been hearing from Trump voters are just flat out wrong. I mean, saying, you know, Biden will take away your freedoms. We don't want to live in a socialist country. We have a number of emails about this. One listener says, my family friend, a woman in her late 60s who works in an office, is married to an engineering professor, believes Trump made up and faked that he had COVID. She believes a group of people stormed a restaurant and told them that unless they voted for Trump, they'd burn the restaurant down. A college-educated person I know in his late 20s believes Hillary and Bill run a child trafficking ring. The listener says shows like Your Call are so important because we need to hear the truth. We have a number of emails from people along the same lines who are saying people are living in this other media sphere believing these lies.
Right. I mean, we live in a country where somewhere between 20 and 30% of people currently believe in some aspect of QAnon, which is absolutely bat crazy, right? You know, we've always had tendency in this country to conspiracy thinking. But I would say two things. Prior to the internet, you really had to go looking for it. It wasn't like something that would just sort of turn up on your doorstep. You couldn't go click, click, click. Ooh, I want to go read about a child porn ring. So, you know, that's running secretly running the government. So I think that's really important. And, you know, and I don't totally blame the tech companies for it, because, you know, questions with them in censorship get really sticky really, really fast. You know, one man's, you know, conspiracy theory is another man's truth. And, it, you know, and while obviously stuff like QAnon is kind of an easy call, in my opinion, there's other stuff that wouldn't be. And so that's an issue, right? And we just don't really want to think about that right now because it is so sort of appalling. But the second part is again, this sort of nebulous notion of media literacy. It's never really existed. What we had till very recently for about 100 years was, you know, a very robust system of local journalism where, you know, you read your local paper and you knew your local journalist who turned up at the, you know, local Little League game and the weekly city council meeting and the opening of the shopping plaza, you know, fill in the blank here. And this worked in a couple of ways. Is first, that was the news for the most part, unless you were watching TV news, which a lot of people are, obviously. But second, you know, people got to know local journalists, and they got to know and trust who these people were, and in turn kind of learned what the media is through that. So it's this idea that you're just going to then, you know, take that strata away, which the internet did, and just replace it with this nebulous notion of media literacy that we're going to teach people to tell the difference. It's like something that sounds good, but then when you start thinking it out practically, you're like, wait a second. How do I do that exactly? Like, how does that work? How are we going to teach people to tell, you know, if something is real versus fake, especially in a world, by the way, where the President of the United States tweets out whacked out conspiracy theories like that Joe Biden was in on, like, you know, some killing of a Navy SEAL. I mean, that's bonkers on a basic level, right? Mm. So these things get really complicated.
Yeah, and Sandy writes in and says, I used to live in a rural area where only Fox and conservative Christian stations were available with their endless broadcasting of Trump propaganda. You cannot get liberal views nor Democratic views anywhere. There are many, many parts of the country like that.
There are. This is really a problem, actually. And, you know, you could, you know, blame various iterations of, you know, law but done by both Democrats and Republicans for it in Washington. The Fairness Doctrine was taken out in the late 1980s by the Reagan administration, which, you know, prohibited, you know, made radio and television that was over public airwaves, you know, show both sides of an issue. You could also, frankly, blame the Clinton administration for the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which allowed for mass consolidation and also took a real knockout of local news.
That's right. And now to your point about QAnon, I'm reading from the New York Times right now. QAnon, I can't even believe I'm saying this first sentence. QAnon scored its first national political victory on Tuesday when Marjorie Taylor Greene, a supporter of the convoluted pro-Trump conspiracy theory, won a House seat in Georgia. She will be going to the halls of Congress.
It's staggering. And while on one level it probably reflects the fact that a lot of people are so partisan that they would basically vote for a Democrat or Republican corpse, literally in North Dakota, I believe a state legislator who died of COVID last month got elected. I think it also reflects a certain amount of credulousness and uncaring by people, and maybe both.
Well, thank you for the calls and the emails. Let's go next to Stacy in Hayward. Hi, Stacy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead. You're on the air.
So I just wanted to say that instead of pointing fingers at what the Republicans are doing, that I think we really need to start looking inward and why are the DNC keeps putting up these candidates that don't represent the party, and why as Democrats we're forced to vote for a 70-year-old white man. I think that the DNC is doing a huge disservice to the Democrats.
Helene, what are your thoughts on this one?
I think this is both correct and not correct. I think there's a lot of cases where you could say, yes, it seems like voters will vote for somebody who simply stands up for their beliefs, and isn't, you know, somebody sent over from central casting designed to, you know, supposedly appeal to them. And I think some of that actually explains Katie Porter's success in somewhat conservative Orange County, California. People flat out respect her, and she works hard. And I think that's important. But I would also say that, again, you know, some of it that Democrats might need to reckon with is that a lot of people are Republican. And that if they are Democrat, they're not, you know, it's not going to be a race thing or a religion thing necessarily, but they want people to stand up for the environment, or they want people to not, you know, or, you know, Medicare for all or something like that. I don't want to, you know, say one issue over the other, but that they don't want to vote for Republican light. There's the old Harry Truman line that, you know, gives people a choice between a real Republican and a fake Republican. They'll vote for the real one every time. And I think there's some truth to that, unfortunately.
Well, thank you for that email. You know, Helene, this also speaks to a tweet. You retweeted a tweet from, let's see here, Miles Howard. And Miles wrote, he covers a number of issues for various publications. He says, it's becoming clear that many of the big wins for Biden are largely due to years of groundwork laid by the same activists and organizers that the Democratic Party sidelined in their failed quest for Lincoln Project voters. Biden is basically riding that swell on a boogie board.
Right. And I would say that's an extremely accurate take. I mean, and that's something else that really needs to be reckoned with. You know, the Republicans have organized at very low levels, you know, of, you know, it, not low levels, that's the wrong word, you know, very, you know, levels of individual voters for decades now. And the Democrats really did not, and still try to discourage it to an extent. You know, I'm from New York, where, you know, basically the entire state Democratic Party apparatus was set up with, you know, with like somewhere between 10% and 15% of voters voted. And, you know, it's been a sort of shock to the system for them, you know, post the Trump win, to have people coming in organized, you know, that they organized themselves, right? The resistance organized itself and saying, wait a second, what's going on here? Just to make it clear how out of control the system was. We had a system where essentially a group of renegade Democrats had set up with the Republicans to control the state legislature, even though Democrats actually had a majority. And it was widely thought by everyone that Andrew Cuomo, our governor, had set this up because he wanted to run for president at some point as a moderate Democrat. And it really took, you know, the involvement of getting more people voting and organizing and going to neighborhood meetings and, you know, to do away with that. It took to 2018 to vote these people out. But the amount of organizing that was done was incredible, and it was done, for the most part, against the wishes of the Democratic Party, which is something we still really haven't reckoned with.
Yeah, I mean, and also to add another layer to this, we've been doing so many shows over the last couple of weeks about gerrymandering, about voter suppression, about how many people have been disenfranchised over the last decade.
Right. And, you know, and if, you know, if Georgia might be still an example of that, though it does not seem to have been quite as bad on this go round as it was in 2018. But, the, you know, this is a huge issue. And the Supreme Court has basically turned a blind eye slash encouraged it. And what do you do? And one way to counteract that is to get more and more people to vote. But we have a system set up that seemingly discourages people voting in almost any which way possible. I mean, what other country do people line up for hours upon hours to vote? You know, what other first world country that considers itself a democracy? What other country do they wait days to get, you know, a result? In Europe, they have a result within an hour or two. Or Canada. I mean, this is barbaric, and we all take this for granted.
Yeah, and then also to even take it to another level, when you have gerrymandering and the Democrats get more votes, but the Republicans win and mm-hmm. they pass laws that the people do not want, it really does make people say, why should I take part in this process?
Right. I mean, you know, the whole issue of the Electoral College. I mean, on one level, you know, Biden basically won in a landslide based on the popular vote. This shouldn't even be close. I mean, the Senate is more or less the same issue. I mean, California has two senators, so does New York, so does Wyoming, which doesn't even have the population of Washington, D.C. I mean, there is something terrifically wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take another call. Let's go to Mark in San Francisco. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show. Mark, are you still with us? Oh, I think Mark got tired of holding. Helene, we have a number of questions. I'm not sure you can answer this, but we'll do a show about this in the coming weeks. A number of questions about electronic voting machines. How many people are voting on them? There have been problems with them in the past. Has anyone looked into that? Not sure if you can go there or not.
I haven't looked into it, but it is funny because I said something to my husband just before I went on the air about this, that I was actually curious about this too, that I would like to know, what was going on, basically. I don't have an opinion greater than that to share with you, but that, you know, that is something that has, you know, come under suspicion before, and that I will say, regardless of how people feel about this, that there is anywhere in this country where there are electronic voting machines where you can't actually run a tally of the vote, which is true in some parts of the country, right, where you can't do an audit, it is mind-blowing to me. I mean, and I think that's just basic common sense. I'm not sure, you know, we would run an election in like a homeowner's community that way. I mean, it's that's actually sort of staggering when you think about it.
Right. Well, we'll definitely do a show about that in the coming weeks. So thank you for those emails. Final thoughts, Helene. We are still waiting on results from Wisconsin. We should have those soon. And it looks like there's about an 80,000 vote separation in Georgia with Trump leading right now. But Atlanta could make it very close.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still, as I said, cautiously optimistic about Biden. I really do believe he will be the next president. as I said, it shouldn't have come to this. It just shouldn't have come to this. And some of it is, you know, a reflection of, you know, our sort of rotten voting system. Some of it is a reflection of our, you know, our constitution, what is could basically be called constitutional rot. And some of it, frankly, is because the Democratic Party kind of misunderstood, you know, sort of the nature of who people wanted to see in office in some places. And I think all of that needs to be, you know, discussed. But again, I mean, the thing I would emphasize over and over again is that, you know, Joe Biden, like Hillary Clinton before him, won the popular vote easily. And that's something the Democrats should be discussing every single minute. I mean, people wanted a Democratic president, full stop.
Helene Olin is an opinion writer with The Washington Post, and you can find her latest piece at yourcallradio.org. Helene, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Thank you. Well, in the coming days, we'll continue following the election and we'll bring you the latest. If there are any angles you want us to take or any guest ideas, we'd love to hear from you because we're basically just waiting to find out what happens and then we'll bring you the updates. We also definitely want to talk about propositions. It's a strange thing to say people don't care about issues. I think they really do. I mean, when you look at what's happening in some states, a lot of incredible propositions passed, but then a lot of progressive propositions also did not pass. And again, there was so much money that was spent on this election. We didn't spend that much time this time around covering money in politics, but again, it broke records and we really need to have a conversation about what it will take to remove all of this money from politics. So any ideas, any guest ideas, we'd love to hear from you. Your call at kalw.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for keeping our studio running. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.